Welcome to the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. I'm Jessica LaRusso, director at CREXI, and today's host. Each episode, the CREXI team dives into a broad range of topics with featured experts to investigate trends, educate listeners, and understand the latest industry news. As the nation's fastest growing online CRE platform, we're excited to provide a window into the inner workings of commercial real estate for this generation and the next. Welcome, and thank you all for joining us for this episode of the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. In this show, we cover a broad range of topics that cater to CRE newcomers and industry leaders alike. I'm your host, Jessica LaRusso, Director of Sales, and today we are thrilled to sit down with John Swartz, Principal at True North CRE. A little bit about our guest. Primarily serving Los Angeles and the surrounding area, John has over 20 years of experience working with buyers and investors of multifamily income properties, helping his clients build long-term, multi-generational wealth. Born and raised in Detroit, John has lived in Los Angeles for 18 years. He began his real estate career in 1998 when he interned for Taubman Company in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. He has worked for some of the nation's leading multifamily, retail, and mixed-use developers, including Legg Event Real Estate Group, Watt Companies, and the Westfield Corporation. In 2010, he became a California licensed broker and since has earned many industry awards and recognitions, including the West Region Producer of the Year at Transwestern in 2018 and 2019, and the West Region Deal of the Year at Transwestern from 2017 to 2019. In addition to his extensive background as a real estate agent, he received a Bachelor's of Arts from Michigan State University and a Master of Science in Finance from Walsh College. As a top-notch real estate broker, John has acquired and disposed of over $1 billion of real estate over his career. And in addition to his real estate business, John likes to stay incredibly active. He currently lives in Los Angeles with his wife, Medria. When he isn't conducting real estate transactions, you can find John cycling in the Santa Monica Mountains, exploring museums, and traveling. His passions include architecture, design, and community advocacy. John, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for the wonderful introduction.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know we just covered a lot about your background, but I'd love to dive right in briefly to hear more about your career path and the lessons that you've learned along the way. So let's kind of start at the beginning. Tell us about where you're from. You know, you're from Detroit, and really, how did you get started in commercial real estate?
Yeah, so it all started, back when I was getting my master's degree, and at the time, I didn't really have an idea. I wanted to be a stockbroker or financial planner, if you will. And along came an internship opportunity for a company called the Taubman Company, which I wasn't too familiar with, but my father, he's like, "Whoa, you should take that." You know, he knew a lot of people. It was a phenomenal company. I'm like, "All right, I'll give it a try." And next thing you know, I just started helping out as an intern doing the specialty leasing with kiosk and leasing agents, touring shopping centers around Michigan and the Midwest, and just worked with a lot of great people. And it was a lot of fun. And, you know, the company is known for having employees stay for 15, 20 plus years, which is almost unheard of. But nonetheless, I loved it. And so, you know, fast forward, finished up my master's degree, decided to become a ski bum for a season in Park City, Utah with my brother, and realized, okay, you know, selling skis and, ski equipment at Park City Mountain wasn't going to cut it, and needed to finally, you know, get back into it and get a quote unquote real job, if you will. And so next thing you know, I went back to the Taubman Company and became a financial analyst there and Yeah, it was great. So learning how to underwrite regional shopping centers, doing the development analysis, and then, you know, learning how to get acquisition loans and construction loans and permanent financing. So it was really a full, well-rounded gamut of financial analysis, which is a great foundation to start off a real estate career on.
Absolutely. So how did you, let's kind of talk about that shape of your career path. Like, how did you transition from more of the analyst side to being more of the real estate, you know, salesperson, broker? And did you have any mentors along the way that helped shape that path?
Well, I had some great mentors at the Taubman Company, my boss and his boss as well. And then when I came out to California, kind of did a little bit more of the same, but got more involved, had more of a active role than kind of behind the scenes role with some of the other companies like Lagavant Real Estate Group and Watt Companies. And then honestly, the brokerage, I've always wanted to do something for myself, my family, my mom and my brother are both entrepreneurs. And so some, and long story short, that the recession hit in 2008-ish and 9, and I was, Lagavant asked to keep me on, but wanted to give me a big pay cut. And I'm going, oh, no. And then, next thing I know, I'm spending a lot of time at the beach and, talking to a couple people, trying to figure things out. I'm like, I've got some time. I enjoy sales. I enjoy working with people. Might as well get my broker's license. And so studied for that. And that's how it
Love
all
that.
started.
Wow. So was that right in 2008 you got your broker's license and transitioned, or a little bit after?
I got my broker's. I remember the day I got it. I was walking to West Hollywood. I was living my what with my wife. She was my girlfriend at the time. We moved to West Hollywood because she had a rent control apartment. And I'm walking on Melrose. And I'm like, oh, congratulations. You've passed your broker's exam. I think it was December 30th of
Wow, you got the
2009.
date down. That's awesome. So, we have a lot of people that, are both kind of newcomers and industry vets here. What were some of the lessons that you learned early on that really became invaluable going forward in your career? Any favorite mistakes or anywhere where kind of the path led you somewhere you didn't expect?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot. First and foremost, never be afraid to make a mistake, right? Don't intentionally make one, but never be afraid to, and always learn from it. That's the biggest key takeaway. I was starting out, you're a little bit nervous to make a mistake. The other thing is always ask questions. Never be afraid. There's no such thing as a dumb question. It's worse leaving a conversation or a client meeting without knowing what the clear objective is. So always ask questions. And another key thing is be consistent. Consistency is key in this business. It's not going to happen overnight, but if you're consistent, it's prospecting, presence, and pipeline. That's what my coach always tells me, and it's so true.
I love that. Can you repeat that one more time for everyone?
PPP, prospecting, presence, and pipeline.
That's
And they all
awesome.
have to happen at this, concurrently.
And so how are you like that consistency, right? How do you kind of juggle your day to day, making sure you hit those three Ps, right? How do you optimize?
Well, a lot of it is, having a clear objective and, working with the team and everything and doing what you're great at and outsourcing what you're not great at. And knowing, my coach always instills this in me, know your hourly worth, right? You're supposed to make X in gross commission. So what's that divided by as many hours and weeks? And if you can hire someone for less than that hourly rate, do it. Because my worth, or my value is meeting with clients, taking the meetings, mentoring my junior brokers, and growing the team. It's not doing a lot of research, finding phone numbers, things like that. So, really just staying in your lane and focusing, but also time blocking. And that is, as easy as it is to say, it is the hardest thing to do.
Live and die by the calendar time blocks, right?
Correct, correct. It's, ideally, schedule meetings in the afternoon. Don't schedule meetings on the east side after 2 because you're going to be stuck in traffic all day. So it's knowing what making the time work for you, but you also have to be flexible at the same time.
Smart and being efficient. And that definitely leads me to something I'm curious about. I'd love to know some of your daily habits and practices that are essential to you, right? It could be CRE related, it could be anything else, right? Are there any tenets of your day that you absolutely make part of your practice?
So I have to get up. I love getting up early. 5:30, between 5:30 and 6, depending on how long I was at the office the night before or what have you. But getting up early, getting a good workout in, be it 20, I have to sweat, get that in, or go on a 20-mile bike ride if I can get out early in time in the morning from Mar Vista to the hills of Brentwood. And it really clears my mind. And on the days when, my doctor will say, hey, you need to have a rest day, doing meditation. And I'm a big
Love
fan
that.
of transcendental meditation.
Wow. So a daily practice, normally in the morning.
Ideally, yes, daily, but more often than not, it's the days I don't get a workout in.
Got it. How long have you been meditating? How long has that been part of your practice?
I've been meditating for a couple of years now, but I got into TM or transcendental meditation earlier this year. And it's, I highly recommend it. I'm not going to lie. I was skeptical at first, but I'm always open to, you know, trying new things as you need to be, or you should be. And it's quite phenomenal.
Well, thank you for sharing that. All of our listeners definitely take a peek at that. See if you can work it into your day to day and check it out. Thank you. I love to meditate as well. It's really important. Well, let's get more into the nuts and bolts of our topic today, which I'm sure everyone is very interested in, you know, always wanting to know what's going on with Los Angeles commercial real estate, the state of the Los Angeles multifamily economy, right? So starting off, let's think kind of like big picture. What's your 30,000 feet overview of the multifamily market today?
The multifamily market today, I still think is a phenomenal market. It definitely has its ups and downs. LA is always going to be coveted by both renters. Everybody wants to live here. You know, is cliche as it's the weather. People want the weather, but also the economy here. There's high paying jobs in both the entertainment, the tech industry, finance, you know, law, every industry is here, right? So there's always going to be a demand for renters or from renters for housing. And you're seeing all this gentrification happen. What used to be West Side's now going all the way to downtown. You know, Silver Lake's already up and come. And, you know, Koreatown, Westlake, MacArthur Park. So you're getting it from every angle. You know, in addition, rents are always increasing. And a lot of that is due to rent control. But at the end of the day, there's still a lot of value add to be had. Some of the issues with the macro level of the apartment market in general, just the financing, the, you know, interest rates have gone up 500 basis points since last year. Debt's getting a lot harder to come by. Equity requirements are much higher on buildings. And also you've got other things, you know, that unfortunately you can't, you can't control the interest rates, but you can, it's one thing for the economy. It's also, you have policies and, you know, mandates coming down that as landlords, you have no control over. You know, certain rent control policies, not being COVID policies and things of that nature. And also you have what just passed, the mansion tax too. So these are other things, you know, there's pros and cons to every market, but these are the things just really for the LA and California markets, if you will.
Yeah, you mentioned the mansion tax. I'd love to get your perspective on really what distinguishes the Los Angeles metro from other California markets in particular. You know, what are the pros and cons for investing in this market specifically, and, you know, kind of a fundamentals perspective based on the current market conditions, right? Because there's a lot that's been happening in Los Angeles with that mansion tax, right? With rates. So love to get your perspective.
I see, you know, I'm starting to see larger transactions happen. The mansion tax is definitely affecting, there's a lot of owners out there right now who are, you know, they're equity sponsors, like they're the partners with limited partners. And so they get paid on a promote structure. And they usually buy buildings for 3 to 5 years. But the way the sponsor gets paid is when they sell the property. And so they get loans on the properties for 3 to 5 years. And now, because of the mansion tax for those properties that are over the $5 million mark, a lot of that promote for those sponsors is going to get eaten away in the mansion tax. And so those sponsors are in a bit of a conundrum because their loans are coming due. And so the question is, do they hang on and try to make some money, hope it goes away, or do they just sell it because, you know, they're on the hook for the loan, not the limited partner. So, you know, I believe we're going to start to see more properties hit the market like that because they just don't want to take it on or have a capital call because they can't refinance out of their current loan. But on the flip side of that, you know, it's you know, property values are coming down a bit too. And what's interesting is, you know, we've done a couple proposals where the property is worth $5.2 million, $5.250 million, but the seller makes more if they sell it for $4.999 million.
Right. So you're seeing the price get adjusted a little bit to, if they're kind of close to that $5 million threshold, to come under.
Right. And the good, I guess the one benefit of that is that you get multiple offers in that situation. So the likelihood of the first buyer backing out, there's someone behind them to pick it up, if you will.
Mm-hmm. That's really great insight. So how have you seen this market, you know, the multifamily market in Los Angeles, really evolve over the last 5 to 10 years?
Well, it's gotten better pricing wise, rent wise. A lot of the metrics have been phenomenal. So that's great. And there's always been a demand and a lot of new development happening. Rent's getting beyond what people, the rent growth's been astronomical, probably best in the nation, maybe, aside from maybe New York or something, like big area metros. But ultimately, you know, as time has progressed, as great as it is, it's definitely one of the more regulated markets, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, those regulations, be them good or bad, for owners and developers, you know, it's causing, you know, you're starting to see a lot of people, they still want to be here, but the buyer pool is starting to shrink a bit. And a lot of our clients, if they want to stay in state, they're moving to Orange County or San Diego County. And if they're going out of state, they're going to the usual suspects, Texas, Florida, Utah, Colorado, and things, states like that.
Yeah. So you mentioned kind of, you know, the regulation, right? How are you seeing, you know, the changing laws impact on development for multifamily? Because, you know, there's obviously a housing shortage here in Los Angeles Metro. What have you been seeing when it comes to development?
I'm seeing development, you know, there's a lot of property or units hitting the market coming online because they've been in the pipeline for a while. But that pipeline's starting to dry up because of these regulations, you know, SBA having to build a lot of affordable, not to mention with the rising borrowing costs of the construction loans and the cash out refis, construction costs have skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. So what people could have paid, you know, back in the day, you know, the land's not worth as much as it once was. And also timeframes have taken a lot longer. I've got a lot of developer clients, and I think that's, you know, they're shortening a bit, but I've had developer clients where, see, a building should have been 18 months and it's been 2.5 years because the C of O has taken a while. And, you know, that's COVID related, but also people at the city, different inspectors coming out. And, you know, but the thing I love about LA is mm-hmm. time heals, right? So if you're looking to make a quick buck, those days I think have come and gone. They may come back. But if you're in it for the long term, I don't think you can go wrong.
I love that. And so when you're advising your clients, right, what mm-hmm. are kind of the long-term upsides, current obstacles, right? What are you telling them to kind of look out for today?
Well, today, you know, it's an ever-changing landscape, right? Mm-hmm. But today to look out for, you know, if you know the game, you've been in it for a while and you're a value add player and you know the tenant buyout process and what renovations work and what don't, then yeah, the value add all day long makes sense. You know, it's getting a little harder to work with tenants because of all the mandates and, you know, other things taking place for tenants. But nonetheless, those buyers are still there and, you know, they're doing great. But, you know, at the end of the day, because interest rates have gone up and everything, they still can't pay what they once were. But for new clients, and we have a lot of new clients wanting to get into the game, I'm suggesting, you know, because they don't have the appetite, they work a day job. And so it's mm-hmm. hard to, you really got to be on top of all your projects here, no matter what, be it a value add development or what have you. But for the clients that want to get in, get a decent return, really need that depreciation to offset their current income, which we're seeing a lot of these days, we're recommending more of the newer product type, like the 4 to 6 units, West Adams area, mid-city, you know, and they're going at decent cap rates, but there's not a lot of risk involved with those. Yeah, and they lease up pretty quickly. Yeah. They work, I don't like saying the word triple net, but they're very turnkey, very easy to manage, you know, if you want to self-manage or hire a management company to do so. And they're not subject to a lot of these regulations that the older buildings are.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. West Adams has grown like crazy. Wow, all the development going on there and the flips, it's pretty wild to see. What other neighborhoods? So you mentioned West Adams. I'm curious to know what other neighborhoods you're kind of seeing across the LA Metro that are a good opportunity.
Yeah, West Adams is a great opportunity right now. I'm liking USC, the USC University Park area. But one of my favorite areas is the Palms area, Palms and Mar Vista. I just still believe there's a lot of untapped potential, being right by Culver City in the Silicon Beach neighborhood without the Venice pricing. There's a lot of potential there. I would say Palms would be my favorite market right now.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing.
Of course.
Curious, this is kind of a fun question, but do you have any surprising thoughts about the current market happenings? Maybe something that might be different than what we've been hearing, in the media. Your own personal opinion.
It's my own personal opinion about what's happening in the current market. Yeah, surprising thoughts, not really, but it's like I tell everybody, it's one thing to have the economy have an effect on your value. It's a whole other thing for public policy to have an effect on your property value. And that's something that everyone needs to be aware of and stay on top of. But one thing that I do find interesting, is that a lot of the clients I talk with who are thinking of selling, even their like rent control buildings and some non-rent control, is that they don't understand that having vacant units adds more value to the property than having them occupied. And I've seen in some cases that on the low end be $30,000, on the high end up to $120,000 to $150,000 of
Wow.
value. Yes.
Just by having some vacant units.
Per unit, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That is kind of surprising.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, well, the reason being is as brokers, we can market to market and allows a new buyer to come in and renovate as they see fit and really get excellent market rents versus whatever the prior tenant might have been paying.
That makes a lot of sense. That's a really good tip. Thank you. So, I mean, you've been working this market a very long time with all of this market knowledge in mind. We'd love to tap into some career expertise regarding what some of the younger brokers or investors can take away from the conversation. So, to provide a little context, what is True North CRE? How did you get it started? Where's the company at today?
So True North CRE has always been a dream of mine to start. It's been a dream of mine to have a build a team with great people that's about everyone involved. It's not myself, it's not just the brokers, it's us, it's people like yourself at CREXI, escrow officers, administrative staff, everyone involved in the entire process. And the whole thing about True North is knowing your true calling in life and your moral compass. We all have to We want to do the best, everything with great intentions. And the thing I love about it is, I learned my dad was a professor of geography and urban planning back at Wayne State in Michigan. And it's given me the opportunity, to bring on a couple junior brokers and train them and mentor them. Every week we have something called office hours. So if there's a topic you want to discuss, come on in. It's from 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon. Or you
Love
want to do a
that.
cold calling session, let's do it. The goal is to bring everybody up and eventually have the junior brokers run the show.
That's so important, right? Continually to be training and improving on
Right.
them. So that's clearly something that sets you apart from, the competition. Is there anything else you're doing with True North CRE that kind of stands out?
Well, we're all about promotion. We work, and so True North CRE, we are based in Beverly Hills, and we are under the Compass umbrella. So I'm sure a lot of people have heard of Compass. It's the largest residential brokerage in the nation. It's a multi-billion dollar market cap company. And we're very fortunate to have those resources behind us and the support behind us. And it's great. We work with, my office is full of 80% residential brokers, another 20% commercial. But it's those residential brokers that, they're selling the houses in Brentwood. Well, their clients that can afford those houses in Brentwood because they own multifamily, so there's really a lot of collaboration here. And I've got to give a shout out to my coach, Rob Powell at the Mossimo Group. He's the one that kept on saying, "John, you're True North," on every coaching call. And I'm like, that really stuck with me. And so that's how the name True North came about.
I love the name. It's an awesome name. Great,
Thank you.
really taps into it. Yeah. And so speaking of kind of following your true north, right, with your clients, like how are you
Yes.
creating the most value for your clients? What keeps them coming back to you for multiple deals, right? Because as you mentioned, you could have a client that owns residential and then multifamily. How are you retaining them?
So we're always checking in with them, clients we've sold properties to, knowing what they're doing. Hey, how are things going with the renovations? Offering rent surveys, but really just checking in, meeting up for drinks or going out to lunch, every quarter. There's always follow-up. It's not, hey, we close a sale, okay, on to the next. It's we always want to keep checking in with them and seeing if there's any other services we can offer or refer out to. And that's why, and the other thing too is we're truthful. We don't sit here to try to buy listings or overprice or overinflate. And yet, like every brokerage, we have had our price reductions. I'm not going to say we haven't. But ultimately, it's about being truthful to the client and truthful to ourselves. And that way, everybody benefits.
Managing expectations, it sounds like you're,
Exactly.
especially
Exactly.
as the market's changing as quickly as it is really important, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've had a lot of tough calls lately, but, it's the thing I love is as we evolve with our relationships with our clients, they don't just become clients, they become friends. And so that adds a whole nother level onto it, which is phenomenal, but another level of trust, but also adds a little bit of level of stress because you want to do right by your friends and your clients. And that's how we treat everybody.
That's amazing. So, speaking of transactions and your clients, was there a favorite ever transaction you had about your career or something that made it really truly unique?
Yeah, there's a couple. Some of the transactions is I is kind of in the intro. I love architecture and I love selling beautiful buildings. More, I just love helping people make wealth and, accomplishing their financial objectives. But of the buildings, there's three that stand out. They're not the largest ones I've sold, but they're, some of the most phenomenal buildings I've sold. There's one on Caswell. If you're familiar with Mar Vista, it's a beautiful building, full glass facade. And just that whole transaction, just I wound up becoming good friends with the buyer and all his partners. And we hang out now. It's not just the building, but it's the
Nice.
transaction, the people involved.
Of course.
The other two, interesting enough, was a building I used to live in Santa Monica.
Oh, wow. What
Yeah.
an amazing opportunity to sell the building you lived in.
Yeah, it was
Wow.
very interesting going back because all the tenants were still there. Like, what are you doing here? I'm like, the building's for sale. And so,
Wow.
and in that, I met another friend and client whose building I'm now selling. And you've probably seen it on Craigslist. It's hard not to miss, but it's the one with the graffiti wall in Venice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. And you met
Yeah.
them through selling the building that you lived in Santa Monica.
He was my neighbor.
Oh,
Across, literally across the hall, and we'd have our doors open. We'd just chat, and he turned out he owns his own architecture firm in Long Beach, and he did small lots. And we kept on talking, and started consulting him on rents and everything over there. And he's like, "All right, let's move this."
wow, small world. Definitely go check out that listing on Crexie. It's a beautiful property. I'm
Thank you.
very
And that
familiar
is
with
a
it.
very exciting building. I love that property.
Awesome. Wow. I can't, that's amazing. Clients everywhere, right? You never know.
It's a kind of interesting circle for all three of those deals because the owner of the Stanford building, his son owned the Caswell building. And then the owner of Melrose is now my architect. I'm a client of his. So,
Keeping it all related. I love
yeah.
that. So switching gears a little bit, given your background and expertise, I'm sure that listeners are really curious about some answers you have to a few rapid fire questions. So
Okay.
am I free to throw a few your way?
Go for it.
Awesome. Okay, so if you were given $50 million today and you had to invest it immediately, what's your go-to asset, location, and why?
Multifamily in Midwest, Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee, and Columbus, Ohio. And why?
Midwest.
Because I love the Midwest. I think there's great opportunity out there. You're not going to get the appreciation, but I'm a strong believer in cash flow. And you can get excellent yields and very stable markets with pretty good rent growth.
Love that. You got that one down. Okay.
Oh,
Favorite
yeah.
tool or software that you use daily on the job? And I promise this is not a trick question.
Crexie. No, actually, you guys are awesome. My favorite tool that I use, and I think every broker, this is one thing I wish I did when I started, get a CRM. I live and die in my CRM.
What CRM are you using today?
Do you have
a few suggestions that you would recommend to a broker kind of getting started, or?
You need to see what works. You know, some of these are so robust and everything. And for what I do for multifamily, you don't need, 100 different fields. It's really just something to help you follow up, be able to email from and keep track of. There's some, that are really toned down. There's no perfect fit. It's just, what are you going to use and how often are you going to use it? And are you going to use it?
That makes sense.
The easier it is to use, the better it is, in my opinion. I'm not a very tech savvy person. So if I got to click around to find it, something doesn't work for me.
That makes a lot of sense. Perfect. Well, as we wrap up, are there any parting words you'd like to share with our audience?
I think given the multifamily market and real estate market these days, there's definitely some turmoil. But right now, kind of like back in the day during the Great Recession, a lot of people wish they'd bought then. I think if you buy now and you're in it for the long term, you are going to make a mint 5 to 10 years down the road. Time heals in real estate.
Love that. Thank you so much. And thank you everyone for joining us. And John, thank you for sharing your insights. I know you're very busy. We really appreciate your time and spending that time to sit down and chat with us. So where can our listeners find you online if they want to get in touch?
So there's a couple places. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find my website or our team website, www.truenorthcrela.com, and Instagram. I'm not a big Instagram person, but we have someone doing it for us.
Nice.
My handle is MultifamilyLA, and then the True North one is True North CRE. And that one is still in process of being built.
Awesome. Easy to remember. Perfect. Thanks everyone for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure not to miss the next one. Visit go.crexi.com/podcast. That's go.crexi.com/podcast and sign up to get the very next episode delivered straight to your inbox. You can also subscribe to the Crexi podcast on your favorite podcast app or check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/Crexi for video recordings of each episode. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.